I'd written pretty extensively about Teddy Shen. I suppose it was when I was serving as a Navy officer myself in HMAS Creswell, Royal Australian Naval College in Jervis Bay. I started to get interested in Sheehan, mainly because I was teaching about him to my naval officer trainees. And the fact that his bravery had been, in my opinion anyway at the time, largely overlooked or undeservedly awarded struck me as being something that was interesting, to say the least. It developed from there, and I remember developing a Teddy Sheehan for VC website. That came and went. Of course, there are quite a few people around the country who are quite incensed about Sheehan over the decades, think that he thought that he had been not recognised with the Victoria Cross when he should have been, and so they started campaigning. And here we are.
Yeah, here we are. It was actually put up for an award in a number of years. But why was there so much opposition to it?
Well, and I sort of cover this pretty extensively in the book, which is probably too long, actually, the book. Coming out again in a new edition next year because it was called Honour Denied. Now his honour has been recognised, so I've changed the title and a few other things. But it seemed that at the time, the Armidale action, HMAS Armidale being sunk, it was slowly being recognised as something that had happened. 1942 was a very bad year for the Navy. It was early December when this happened. There were lots of disasters happening in the Navy. To make matters worse, the matter of recognition of bravery was something that was processed in Britain, which is really strange. Not only could we not, under the regulations at the time, recommend the type of award, you could just recommend a bravery award. It had to be processed in the Admiralty in London, whereas the Army and the RAF were recognised in Australia. And, of course, Britain was fighting for its life, as we were. So things like paperwork weren't perhaps done as well as they could have been. The war being what it was, everybody very busy, the Navy being a smaller service, not having the administrative strength of the other services, and by geez, there was some shocking Navy maladministration in World War II. I went into some detail in the book about it. But one thing led to the other, and it wasn't done. And then you got this attitude after World War II of, well, that was then, and we need to get on with things, and it's too far gone now to do anything about it. In 1950, the King at the time drew a line under World War II honours and said, well, we need to get a more process, let's do that. It was done, and no other recommendation for a Victoria Cross was ever recognised by the Queen after that. And so a lot of people were saying, well, it's done. It may have been not done well, but it was done, and you can't keep going back and revisiting the past. To be honest, in the book I have a chapter about the Americans saying, well, the Americans don't have that attitude, and they have repeatedly gone back, even as far as the American Civil War 150 years ago, to recognise valour, bravery, service, and give it what it should have been given at the time. So I don't know, maybe it's an Australian mindset, but a weird one at that.
It is. Have we changed the rules now, and are those awards promulgated in Australia now?
Well, yes, the Victoria Cross for Australia was instituted in 1975, and that's what Sheehan was given his VC under, the first VC ever given to the Navy. So it'll be the 101st Victoria Cross, and when we're recording this at the moment, the VC has been approved, but it hasn't yet been given to the family, and that may happen later this year. That's all being decided. It has been cast, I believe, is what the VCs get made by. It's a casting process in London by Hancock's, the jewellers. So that will happen. But I don't know. We have gone back and recognised some things that weren't done well in the Vietnam War, Battle of Long Tan, for example. Being an ex-Navy bloke myself and having, as I said, once for 5 years I was teaching this in the Navy, I was an intelligence analyst, and they co-opted me to go and teach because I had a teaching ticket down at the Naval College in Jervis Bay, lovely place, had a young family, so off I went. So you do sort of teach some of this stuff that wasn't done, and as to the question of whether we're going to sort of get it right in the future, I don't know. There were a couple of other chaps who should have been given Victoria Crosses, in my opinion. It may be that you can't keep going back, and certainly I'd be the last person to want to lower the prestige of the VC. For example, in the instances of Heck Waller, who commanded HMAS Perth, and Robert Rankin, who commanded HMS Yarrow, a sloop, both of which were sunk in action against the Japanese, you could argue they were doing their job. Whereas Sheehan, you could argue that he was a young gunner who went back to his 20mm anti-aircraft cannon, manned it by himself and engaged the Japanese who were strafing his mates in the water. You could argue he was doing over and above, so deservedly he was given the VC. So who knows? We may sort of become a bit more tolerant about these things. I'd like to see Sheehan remembered again in a naval vessel's name. I think that the present Collins-class vessel named Sheehan, one of the names for the new submarines, is not Sheehan. Maybe it should be.
Maybe it should be. Let's have a look at who Teddy Sheehan actually was. And when he enlisted, what had he been in civilian life?
Nothing much.
Nothing much?
bit of a labourer. He'd left school. He was only 18, nearly 19 when he died. He'd been a young chap in 1930s Northern Tasmania. Great Depression had left its mark. Not exactly lots of high-paying jobs around in those days, but he did lots of odd jobs going from place to place on farms. He lived in a farming community up in northern Tasmania, Latrobe, Sprayton, Devonport, Launceston, those sort of areas people will be familiar with. He then signed up for the Navy. He went and did his training down at HMS Derwent in Hobart. Doesn't exist anymore, got renamed. And then he'd been to sea a couple of times on training vessels. He went to HMAS Cerberus, often known as Flinders Naval Depot, south of Melbourne, about 90k south of Melbourne, positioned there, so they say, so the sailors couldn't escape. Then he was posted to Corvettes and HMAS Armidale in Sydney. He was actually on board HMAS Cuttable, which was an accommodation ferry vessel when it was torpedoed by the midget submarines in end of May. 42. He was on leave at the time, down in Tasmania, courting a local lady, which was a secret. I didn't know about that until I went into northern Tasmania and started researching it, and I came across a lady who knew his ex-fiancée. She died by the time I caught up with the story. But he was then on board HMS Armidale. One of the many corvettes, scores of these, that we had in World War II, vessel made of war work, as some people used to call them. There's one in Williamstown Dockyard in Melbourne, and there's a couple more around Australia in dry dock as museum vessels. They're not huge. They had a crew of about 100 plus, depends on whether they had radar fitted and so on. They were used for escort purposes, anti-submarine attack, onshore insertion of troops and withdrawal of people and so on. In fact, one of the corvettes, HMS Deloraine, had sunk the I-124 submarine off Darwin, where I am now. I-124 with her 80 crew inside are still off Darwin. So that was a victory for the RAN. That was in the beginning of 1942. So this is a year later, and Armidale is one of the corvettes running out of Darwin. And she goes to sea south of what's now Timor. And she was involved in operations there, fairly sort of complicated with other vessels taking off troops and that sort of thing, and she was caught by Japanese aircraft. Nasty little action. The action on the 1st of December was Japanese aircraft versus naval vessels. Certainly the Japanese by that stage knew really well what they were doing. They were using air-launched torpedoes and bombs. They attacked Armidale from several directions at once, supported by Zero fighters, and hit her with at least one air-launched torpedo. If we ever find the wreck, I'll be interested to see whether she was hit by two or not. Would have blown a massive hole in the side. This is a little warship fighting for its life. Nice sea on that day, nice fluffy clouds, blue skies. Everything sort of hunky-dory except for being attacked by Japanese aircraft. It's a very savage business, ship-to-air fighting like that. I've sort of been on board a few warships in my time and seen how quickly they come over the horizon and how they're on top of you, and you have to be really on your game. And in those days, of course, it's all eye-guided weapons. Armidale had some 20mm Oleichen cannon, three of them. They fire a 20mm shell. They're a rapid-fire thing. Got a crew of about three to four. But you can actually run it with one person if you know what you're doing, and all of the people on an Oleichen crew were rotated around those positions, of loader and so on, the actual bloke who was the gunner. So she and when Armidale is hit by a torpedo. She starts sinking very fast, capsizing. The order's given abandon ship, which means abandon your post and help your mates, and off you go to the Kali floats, the lifeboats, and so on. The Japanese aircraft were continuing to circle and starting to strafe, which means they're using their guns and machine guns, their cannon and machine guns, to attack the ship even further. No mercy being shown. Sheehan, by all accounts, was going to the side. Some people say he was helping one of his mates. Some people say he was wounded. But whatever that was the circumstance, we know that he turned back from leaving the ship, and he went back to his gun and he commenced firing against the Japanese, and drove aircraft away, hit several by the look of it. And then the Armidale was sinking and sunk. There was a curious story there, a bit of a legend, that the gun was firing even while he was underwater, which is actually impossible. We sort of researched that a fair bit. You can't fire a 20-millimeter Lycan underwater. The breech block is prevented from operating by the seawater. But he certainly fired to the end. He fought to the end. Lots of people saw it. And then, very sadly, the Armidale survivors are in the water. One of their boats is shattered and half sunk. They have rafts and so on. The Japanese fly away, and then they're left in the ocean. And in those days, in any days, war days, you're operating with radio silence. You don't want to be triangulated by the enemy. Armidale wasn't overdue, so the search didn't start for a couple of days, and by then more people had died. There was a particularly tragic event where there was a raft sighted by a Catalina flying boat, which photographed it and couldn't land because the sea was too rough. But marked the position and vectored a warship onto the raft's last known position, and by the time it got there, the raft had gone. So a sad event. Lieutenant Commander Richards, the Armidale's commander, survived a heroic action where he did his best in the boats. Then it was Court of Inquiry, recommendation for bravery for Sheehan and others. The recommendation was processed by London, but he was given a thing called a mention in despatches, which wasn't a medal, and it wasn't a post-nominal, meaning letters after your name. It was a little badge that you put on your campaign medal of the time. And so you put it on one of your World War II medals, like a little oak leaf. That was the lowest recognition for bravery you could get. The trouble was, under the laws at the time, there were only two that you could get posthumously after somebody had died. One was the mention in despatches, and the other one was the Victoria Cross. And he wasn't put down for Victoria Cross in London. We don't really know why. There you have it. Of all of the brave reactions in the Navy that I've seen, Sheehan's, I think, is probably the standout. But it sort of created a fair bit of bitterness, I think, over the years. Army had 96 Victoria Crosses, all richly deserved. The RAF 4, the same. Navy, none, nothing. So what is it that Navy people are not as brave? Trouble is, you do your fighting out of sight of land, and quite a lot of the time out of sight of other ships. And sometimes a ship is sunk with nobody surviving, like HMAS Sydney was sunk by the Cormorant off Western Australia. 645 people died, not one survivor. The body was later found on Christmas Island, having been washed up in a Kali float. We don't know how well Sydney fought. I suspect she fought to the end very bravely. You tend to do that. Well, I'm not saying that because I was in the Navy. You are taught to fight the ship, and you do your job, and you help your mates. And I think that's something that people routinely do. To go over and above, like Sheehan did, that's extra, that's special. But here we are. At least we've got now a VC, so history's been made. I never thought it would happen, actually.
Here we are. I first came across the story of Teddy Sheehan quite a few years ago, and I've always wondered why he wasn't awarded that VC.
Mm.
But I have also come across a fair few senior naval personnel who thought that it shouldn't be awarded to him, perhaps because of earlier decisions. I'm not quite sure.
Oh, yes. You get different points of view.
Mm.
I don't care. I always thought he should have got a VC. I thought it was grossly unfair that we didn't. And you can't do that. You can't have one service that's run out of London and the other service is run out of Australia and say, well, bad luck. I know why the naval service was being dominated by the Royal Navy, because navies are the hardest to form. You can actually form an army out of a group of 600 labourers per battalion and say, here's your rifle, now march in this direction, and yell at them until they do a few things right. And armies are quick to form and quick to train. although it doesn't mean they've got a lot of expertise. And, of course, in 100 years ago, 200 years ago, they were easier. These days it's much more difficult, much more skilled in terms of the equipment people carry and the coordination they've got to have with other people. Soldiers need much more training these days, but armies have always been the easiest to form and train. Air forces, not so much, but the Air Force tend to fight at a squadron level. 12 aircraft, 24 aircraft, the riggers and fitters, the admin people, the air crew and so on, all working together. And that's a small group, and it can take being shredded or being told half the squadron is down or we need to replace half and it's still keeping going and so on. But navies fight at ship level at a minimum. And a warship is a really complicated mechanism, and it takes a lot of skilled people to make it go. You're not going to get away with operating a warship with less than 150 in World War II. And it's some smaller ones than that, but that's really sort of something that is reasonably serious, like a corvette, let alone a battleship or a battle cruiser or submarine. Oh, geez, do you need teamwork and leadership? So it's not something you can learn easily in 1914 when we started forming the Navy, or before that in the colonial navies and so on. But Army and Air Force, we can run that in Australia, but we need a lot of training from the Royal Navy as a parent navy, and they did a great job. And I'm sure Australians are grateful for it. And we integrated really well in World War I with the Royal Navy. And in World War II, Australians were good enough to be given command of Royal Navy vessels and Royal Navy flotillas. And you look at people like John Collins and Farncombe, for example, who were the first to a flag, as they say, being commodores. So that's like a one-star general. And they're commanding British sailors and British ships, and the Aussies have come on and they're so good by World War II this is happening. The fact that we weren't processing our own bravery awards back in Australia was an anachronism. It should have been processed, it should have been arranged, it could have been arranged, and it wasn't done. And here we are sort of lumping it. Bad luck, it didn't get done, you blokes, you just miss out. When people might say, well, so what, bravery awards, what does that mean? Okay, if it means so little, then I don't hear anybody else in the Army and the RAF saying, let's not do it, let's not have them. And in fact, I'd take on any Navy person who said that we shouldn't have been giving an award to Sheehan, that we shouldn't have stood up and made our own Navy service awards. It just didn't happen. It was sad. And for that matter, we mishandled lots of others. John Collins actually wrote a very scathing very scathing letter in World War II about his own service record. He was a commodore and he saw his own service record and he said, well, look, it looks like I haven't been doing anything for the last 3 years because there's no paperwork here. And he said, I hope other people haven't been treated as badly as I have. And he could say that with the epaulettes on his shoulders at the time and kick a few backsides and make his feelings known. But it had been very badly mishandled. To give you an example, Heck Waller, who was commanding HMS Perth as a cruiser, went down fighting alongside USS Houston. Captain Rook, by the way, who was commanding the Houston, he got the US Congressional Medal of Honor, their highest award, the equivalent of the VC. Poor old Heck Waller got nothing, as did everybody else on board the Perth. Until 1948, when ironically somebody in the Royal Navy in London was tidying up paperwork and sent a letter to the Australian Navy saying, look, you're just doing a bit of paperwork here, and we noticed nobody recommended them for your bloke who was in charge of HMS Perth. Did a wonderful job from what I hear. Do you want to do anything about a bravery award? And somebody in Australia said, oh, rightio, and recommended him for one, and he got the mentioned dispatches.
Oh, goodness.
How hopeless was that? HMS Yarra, with Robert Rankin in charge, who was a surveyor of all things, in charge of a warship north of Australia, in charge of a little tiny convoy that got monstered by the Japanese in a big way. She went down fighting, and everybody who survived went into prisoner of war camp. So years passed, nothing was done. Nothing was done after the war, and HMS Yarra's personnel got absolutely nothing. Not one person has ever been decorated from HMS Yarra. Yet she was the sole warship in charge of a small convoy. She turned and faced and she fought with what she had. And she was sunk in no short order with her people fighting to the last. One of her sailors, a bloke called Buck Taylor, manned his gun to the last just as Sheehan did. But nothing's ever been given to HMS Yarra. So I suppose I'm sort of getting wound up here, aren't I? Sort of getting passionate about it. But, yeah, it does arouse strong feelings, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's justified. I really do. Well, thank goodness for persistence in the case of Teddy Sheehan, and it has now been recognised. Now, how will they go about awarding this honour?
Well, Sheehan, Sheehan's family will be given the honour. It's generally the case that, okay, Sheehan's been given a VC, and it's sort of almost a non-tangible thing, if you like. It's that piece of metal, of course, but nobody's going to be wearing the piece of metal unless they wear it on their right breast. Sheehan's not around to get it. So generally what happens in these situations is it's given to the family and often the closest relative, and I gather that will be Gary Ivory, who is a nephew of Teddy Sheehan's and has been campaigning ceaselessly for him for years. It may be on the 1st of December, which is the anniversary of her sinking. Maybe not. It has to come from Britain, from Hancock's, the jewellers. And often these things take place at Government House in Canberra. I hear that the Sheehan family are saying the medal will be given to the War Memorial. It's a strange thing. A VC is actually an ugly sort of metal. It's just dull bronze, maroon sort of ribbon. But so rare and so highly prized, and with the name of Sheehan engraved on it, and it's hand engraved, instantly worth nearly $1 million.
Wow.
It goes from being a piece of metal worth nothing much. It's what would you give for a lump of... They're said to be cannons, ex-guns from British Army, from prizes taken. You can read up on it quite extensively as the history of the VC. It's quite interesting. But an old award given back in Victoria's time, it goes from being that lump of fairly worthless metal to being a piece of metal that's worth $1 million. People like Kerry Stokes have bought VCs for the nation and presented them to the War Memorial. So instantly of tremendous monetary value. But, of course, it's much more than that. So the family, Gary Ivory, has never stopped campaigning in northern Tasmania and anywhere else he can be heard, as of people like Guy Barnett, who is a Tasmanian MP, who has never stopped for more than 20 years, I think, saying that Sheehan should have been given a VC. And later, in later times, you've had other politicians who've joined in the last couple of years. They range from the top of Australia to the bottom. So Luke Gosling is a local MP here in the Territory. He made a speech in federal parliament, and so did Jackie Lambie from Tasmania. So of all politicians of all persuasions, and people from all sorts of backgrounds have joined in Sheehan's cause over the years. I think he's caught the imagination. And there is a great painting done by Jeff Isaacs. It hangs in the War Memorial. It just shows this multicoloured sun... afternoon sun, I suppose, with Japanese aircraft coming out of the sun towards the ship, and Sheehan almost collapsed into his gun, still firing at the aircraft speeding towards him. And I think that's caught the imagination of a lot of people over the years. It certainly caught mine.
Mine too. Now, we do have a few of our World War II veterans still alive.
Yes, there is actually. Ray Leonard is still with us. He became a GP after the war, and he's still doing well in Victoria, I believe. I think he's the only one from Armidale. Most of her ship's company and the people on board, she had some soldiers on board, have been taken off Timor. Most of them died.
It was a sad stage in Australia's history, but these awards for bravery, so deserved, absolutely. Well, congratulations to the Navy for the Teddy Sheehan Victoria Cross. Look, I think from what you've said in that, there are a few more interviews to go, I think. Collins and Rankin, the HMAS Yarra, Buck Taylor. We better get together and have a talk about those too.
Sure, happy to. There's sort of odd pockets of naval history that are weird. Naval history is a funny thing. I mean, I suppose I've become an overall military historian over the years, and certainly going off and serving on dry land in warfare taught me a lot and made me sort of think a lot. But yeah, naval history is an odd thing. I wrote a book called The Submarine Six, which is still in print, actually. I think Avonmore in South Australia published it, and it was a little mini bio of each of the six people who had a submarine named after them. So Collins and Farncombe and Rankin, there and there. And a strange thing, three of them are Tasmanian, three out of six Tasmanian. When I was researching Honour Denied for the Teddy Sheehan story, I came across this sort of legend that said Tasmania contributed more to the Navy than any other state or territory in World War II. And I thought, that's a bit odd. I mean, it came with a standard joke, and they were trying to escape. I actually researched it. It is true. It's only just true. But you sort of think, well, why did so many Tasmanians volunteer for the Navy? And I suppose maybe they're sort of a bit more maritime. You've got Launceston and Hobart both on the water. Interesting. There are some fascinating stories there, as there are across the whole Navy. I mean, the bloke who served to the end on board HMAS Voyager when she was hit by Melbourne off Jervis Bay in 64, a bloke called the Chief Petty Officer Rogers. He couldn't get out of the bow section, which was still alive. There's a little tiny access hatch in the bow section of the Daring-class destroyers. In fact, there's one in Sydney. You can go and stand on it, and you look at that little hatch, and you think, no, I couldn't get through that either. It wasn't big enough for the sailors who were trapped in that section still afloat to get out. The water was slowly rising, and Rogers, who was ex-RN and had served in World War II, he led everybody in singing hymns. The water just rose, and then suddenly, whoosh, you're taken to the bottom. He got the George Cross, which is the highest award you can get in non-combat.
Navy veteran Dr. Tom Lewis there, author of the book Honour Denied, Teddy Sheehan, a Tasmanian hero, and other brave warriors of the Royal Australian Navy. And as Tom said, now that Teddy has been awarded the Victoria Cross, there'll be an update to that book.